to another programme of Animates. I'm Jo Van Cool, and today I'm going to be talking to Jenny Harlow, who's an expert on dogs who have problems. Well, good afternoon, Jenny. Lovely to meet you and to talk to you about dogs and what sort of things happen to dogs when they are left alone.
Lovely to meet you too, Jo. Thank you for having me.
And what do you find when dogs are left alone and they're suffering a bit?
Well, the symptoms are if you come home and find that your dog has chewed the skirting boards, toileted all over your best rug, and they don't normally do that, or you come home and you find that there's an angry letter from your neighbours saying that your dog has been barking and howling all day, these are the physical signs that your dog is unable to cope while being alone, and they may well be suffering from separation anxiety.
And this is quite common, I think, isn't it?
It affects approximately 13 to 15% of dogs, and you know, some of them will experience it in certain parts of their life. So dogs who have had lots of changes in home, in the home environment. So they might have changed home several times, or somebody's left or somebody's come, that kind of thing. Often the things that trigger a dog into these panic behaviours.
But usually, wouldn't dogs with people with disabilities, wouldn't they have come from some situation or organisation where they've been trained a little bit?
Often, yes, absolutely. So people who are lucky enough to have a dog because they have a visual impairment or because they have a hearing issue or a physical disability and the dog has been trained by a professional for several years, those dogs will most likely have been taught to be alone. However, there's a whole range of people who have personal assistance dogs, so psychiatric assistance dogs or dogs that they have trained through the Mind Dog program. These people sometimes get their dogs from a rescue shelter, all sorts of different places, and these dogs haven't necessarily been taught how to be alone.
I see. How do people normally behave? What's the common response to this behaviour pattern?
Well, the most common response is, am I a bad pet parent? What have I done? Is this my fault? You know, people feel guilty. Or they say to me, Jenny, my dog, I always come back to them. I always come back to my dog. I never not come back. Why does my dog not understand? But the thing is, the dog is having a panic reaction. They're unable to control it. You know, there's no logic to this. It's not that we're able to say to the dog, hey, I'll be back in half an hour. Don't worry about it. There's no logic to it. Your dog just panics when they're left alone.
And I suppose, too, we tend to forget that we're talking about a dog here whose level of communication is somewhat different from our own.
It is. However, it is similar to the kind of panic that we might feel at certain things. So, you know, I hate spiders. If somebody says to me, oh, stop being so silly, and throws a spider at me, my panic is going to go through the roof. Yeah, so doing that makes my panic worse. And so with our dogs, it's a little bit the same. You know, there's no logic to my being so terrified of spiders. You know, most of the spiders in my house are more scared of me. So why should I be scared of them? There's no logic to it. It's the same when we leave our dogs. There's no logic to it. They just feel this panic and they're unable to control that reaction.
So do you find people with a disability more likely to seek help with managing their dog or less?
Well, probably, I would say they're probably more likely to seek help because their dogs are such an integral part of their life. They go with them out into the public. They need to perform specific and detailed jobs for them. So if something starts to go wrong, I think that they are quicker to go, okay, I need to ask someone, what do I do about this?
Because I wouldn't know who to go to. You know, I mean, I do now, obviously, yes. Jenny Harlow. But if I didn't know about you, how would I find out if I was
someone? Sure. So often people might go to places like the Delta Institute. So the Delta Institute is a research and therapy dog advocacy group, and they also train dog trainers, train people to be dog trainers. So I've studied with the Delta Institute, and on their website they have a list of trainers. They might go to somebody like the Association of Pet Dog Trainers, where there's also a list of trainers available. If the person has a dog that's registered through a program such as Mind Dog, they might talk to Mind Dog and say, I need help. How do I get that help? And Mind Dog will be able to suggest to them an appropriate trainer.
But I suppose some people with disabilities have just got a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe done a bit of training with mm-hmm. some organisation.
Yeah.
And really not enough. They haven't gone with an organisation like Mind Dog,
mm-hmm.
so that there isn't quite that wide exposure.
Sure, sure. Well, certainly speaking to your vet, because often the vets will know trainers. There are great clubs around as well. So often clubs that train on Sundays, that kind of thing, where you can go along to them and say, my dog has this problem. Can you recommend someone who would be able to help me?
And do you find some breeds of dogs more likely to suffer from anxiety?
There are breeds that are more timid than other dogs. Some dogs have genetically programmed to be more outgoing. So, you know, your border collies, those kinds of dogs can be really energetic, but they can equally be dogs that suffer from separation anxiety. It's really not breed specific, separation anxiety, so it can affect any breed of dog.
So how long does it take to train them out of that? And presumably you'd be working with the disabled person.
Absolutely. It's a very detailed process. This, I would think, is one of the questions that's on the top of the list for anybody who owns a dog with separation problems. How long will it take to fix my dog? The best way I can explain it is to liken it to going on a diet. So you and I both decide we need to lose a couple of kilos. We go on a diet at the same time. We follow the same eating plan. One of us is going to lose weight quicker. I might hit a plateau and not lose any weight for 2 weeks while you're merrily, the scales are getting lower and lower. And one of us is going to get to our goal quicker than the other one because we're genetically different,
mm-hmm.
and our bodies respond differently. And it's the same with our dogs. We need to go at the rate that the dog can actually cope with. So it's actually the dog who tells us how long it's going to take.
Yes, I can imagine that.
Mm.
What are some of the do's and don'ts?
Well, let me start with the don'ts because I think that's clearer. Don't ignore it. If you think that your dog has separation problems, do seek help because it is a condition that generally worsens over time rather than resolving itself. So always seek help. Speak to your vet. Work with a certified trainer. So don't ignore it. Do get help. And work within your dog's ability to learn the steps to be alone. Don't try and push too hard because if we do that and we're just tipping the dog over into panic all the time, we're not helping the dog learn to calm down about it. We're just making the panic worse.
And not helping the owner either.
Not helping the owner, not helping the dog, not helping the neighbours who are complaining, not helping the owner whose house is being damaged and that kind of thing. So work with a trainer and work at the dog's pace.
Right. Good advice, I think. Is it very expensive? Because I think that's always in people's minds. Is it very expensive to do this?
To work with separation anxiety, it can be a long process. The process that I follow is a well-worn path and it's been shown to have some great success. The first 4 weeks are really key in setting up the dog to succeed, in giving the guardian lots of information about how to proceed, what to do, when to increase the absences, when to drop back, when to leave it the same. So that in the first 4 weeks, we're really creating a strong foundation. We're setting the dog up with a really great foundation and giving the guardian as much information as possible about the process. So if people can take all that on board, you know, I can give them lots of information and get them started within the first 4 weeks as a foundation exercise. And then it's up to the guardian to actually to take the steps themselves. Mm-hmm. Or if they want, of course, then they can sign up for more one-on-one assistance from somebody like myself. If you continually need more assistance, yes, I guess it does drag out to be a bit more expensive. But equally, if you take on board the messages, the guardian is actually able to proceed on their own.
And do they see you or whoever, do they see them for an hour each day in those 4 weeks?
So the way we do it is I have contact via a shared spreadsheet with the person every day. So 5 days a week, I'm in contact with them. I will write out a series of steps that I would like them to do based on what I have observed about their dog's reaction to being left alone. Some dogs, we might start with walking to the door and touching the handle, turning around and coming back. That's it. Some dogs, we might be able to start with walking through the door, closing the door, and then waiting for a minute. It just depends where the dog is at, but we start where the dog can do it. We write out the steps. We ask the guardian to practice once a day, and then they write comments in the sheet. And according to those comments and their observations of their dog's behavior, I then upgrade the steps for the next day. And then once a week, we have an online session. So through a program called Zoom, which is very similar to Skype, where we're both online and we can see and I can observe the dog. So I'm observing the dog during the steps. And then we try and move the dog even further along again. And then 2 days a week, everybody has a rest. So the dog gets a rest, the guardian gets a rest.
And the dog needs it, I'm sure, as much as the guardian.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so we, you know, it doesn't have to be 5 days in a row. You can work for 2 days, have a day off, work for 3 days, then have another day off. It's, you know, it's what works for the schedule of the guardian and the dog. So that's basically how we do it. And it's through observation of the dog's body language and physical signs that we read how the dog is coping, when it's okay to move ahead, when we need to drop back, or when we might need to stay at that same level just for a little bit longer.
And I guess the manifestation of a panic attack varies from dog to dog hugely.
Correct. Yes, it does. So some dogs might have very pronounced reaction. So chewing the skirting boards, you know, destruction of property is one of the ones that people, it costs people thousands of, or can cost them thousands of dollars. So destruction of property, destroying blinds, furniture, skirting boards, that kind of thing. Another one is inappropriate toileting. So a dog who's completely toilet trained never goes in the house when they're left alone four times, you know, like in they'll just go everywhere and make a huge mess. Vocalization, barking, howling, whining for hours. These are the things that are signs. Also, dogs can sometimes chew at their own paws, at their tail. So this is a really terribly distressing symptom where they actually gnaw away at themselves in distress. Their distress is so great that they, what we call self-mutilate. Basically.
Yeah, well, it's similar to people.
That's right.
And I suppose dogs also vary when they've been stressed and the owner comes home. Their response to the owner at that point can be very different.
Absolutely. So often you will see highly excessive greeting, like the dog's just crazy excited to see.
And
like,
sometimes bites.
Yes, sometimes can get overworked in it. So what we want to see when the person comes back in, that we acknowledge the dog, you know, hello, yes, all good, I'm here. But we don't want to create a big scene. You know, when we're practicing out the absences with the dog, it's just normal. Coming and going, no big deal. It's normal. We don't say, you know, oh, darling, goodbye, you know, mummy's going or anything like that. We just, okay, see ya. And then out we go and then come in. Go, hi, back. I'm back, Fido. Yep, all good. And so that we're just our comings
as
and goings.
As you would with a child,
yep,
really.
Just normal.
So the fact that you can do this online suggests to me that it actually works for people living in regional areas too.
It works for people living in regional areas, absolutely. I don't physically need to go and see the people. In fact, it's better if I don't, because what I'm trying to do is rehearse the dog into absences as close as possible to a real life event for that dog. So if I'm there, that's not a real life event. I've got dog treats in my pocket, and before I left, my little dog jumped all over me, so you know they can smell a dog. I'm a stranger in the house. So all of these things mean it's different to normal every day for that dog who's suffering from separation anxiety. So it's much better if I'm not there. And so by being online, not only do we create more realistic absence training, but we also can see the dog in real time and give real time feedback about what's appropriate for the next steps.
Could you give one specific example or a story involving somebody whose dog was suffering dreadfully and changed?
Sure. I've been working with a young dog called Morgan. She's a almost 2-year-old Rhodesian Ridgeback cross. She was rescued as about 3 or 4 months old. Her guardian adopted her from a shelter. So they've had her for quite a long time. She lives in an apartment. She gets lots of exercise. She has a dad who absolutely adores her, and she could not be left alone. He would walk out the door. She would howl and paw at the door. So she would go to the front door, pawing at the front door, bit of a bark. More of a bark, howling. So she was totally distressed. And as you can imagine, in an apartment,
not too popular.
Also, people get very distressed at seeing their dogs in such distress. That's one of the difficult things for these guardians to cope with, is seeing their dog in such terrible distress.
And I think surely, I mean, if I'm in an apartment and I can hear somebody else's apartment having a dog that's carrying on, I get really upset too.
Absolutely.
Because I worry about the dog.
Absolutely. And so what we've done with Morgan is we have been able to, by rehearsing these tiny absences, and she was able to be left for about a minute before she set into these behaviours, before she started to get stressed. So we started at that point with her training. You pick up your bag, you put on your sunglasses, you go to the door, open the door, step out, come back in. And then we do that several times. So the dog goes, oh, not this again, this boring game. Oh, here he goes again, coming and going. What's he doing? Oh, I'm going to lie down. And so the dog gets bored. The dog goes, oh, okay.
I'll just go to sleep now.
And so we do a series of what we call warm-up steps to get the dog into this, oh, boring game again. And then the last step is the point of the exercise, which is you might stay out for, well, in Morgan's case, at the beginning it was 1 minute. So the point of the exercise was the 1 minute absence at the end. But we'd spent 10 or 15 minutes warming her up. So she's just like, oh, really? Not this again. And then for a minute, she's fine. And then the guardian comes back in. Oh, yep. Hi, Morgan. All good. And that's the end of it for that day. That's the end of the training for that day. So by going through this process, we can then extend the dog again and again and again and get them.
And where's Morgan at now?
Morgan is at about an hour. So she's able to be left for an hour. She has had a bit of a rough time. She's had kennel cough. She's had some digestive issues. She was put on some medication. So she's had, you know, all of these things slow up the progress and change things. But now she's back on and she's making great progress.
Oh, that sounds like a lovely story.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, thank you so much for coming in. That was really wonderful. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners will probably either ring the station or ring to find out more about you and what you offer.
Yeah.
Would you like to, as a wind-up, please tell everybody how to get in touch with you should they need.
Thank you, Jo. That's wonderful. Thank you. And I have to say thank you so much for having me on, because I've really loved it. If people would like to get in contact with me, my website is jhdogtraining.com.au. So if you just go to that, or you can phone me, which is 0419 535 236. So either of those ways, all my details are on my website. So jhdogtraining.com.au.
Well, thank you very much. And I'm sure that people will really be fascinated by all of that, because really suffering from anxiety, often one doesn't initially realize that that's what's happening.
Sure.
I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what's going on? What is this? Yeah, not understanding. Yeah, absolutely. And so being able to talk to someone is really helpful, definitely.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you very much indeed for coming in.
That's my pleasure.
Marvellous.
My pleasure.
And I'm sure there'll be lots of responses to this.
I'd love that.
Thank you. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
So that brings us to the end of another program. I'd like to thank Katie Brooks for her editing skills and Joseph Swanser for all his help doing research on our behalf. This is Jo Van Cool from 2RPH, which is part of RPH Australia, saying goodbye for now from Animates until we meet again.